This is the Winchester Talking Newspaper for the week ending the 17th of December 2021. Hello and welcome to the Winchester and District Talking Newspaper with extracts from the Hampshire Chronicle for the week ending the 17th of December, which this week have been edited by Margaret Boyden and Linda Vincent. And I will say this is the last recording for 2021, and there will not be one on Christmas Eve, and there will not be one on New Year's Eve. So the next one you'll receive will be early in January. Your readers today are Norma York.
Hello.
Andrew Parkinson.
Hello.
And I'm your presenter, Keith Vincent. And the main headlines this week are death sentence, new collection of dinosaurs heading to Marwell Zoo, and rethink over council's plans for River Park. So, Norma, may we have the story behind the first headline, please?
A death sentence. Winchester residents and business chiefs are becoming increasingly concerned about restrictions on people's freedom as COVID cases continue to rise in the district. On Tuesday, MPs passed new restrictions, including making it compulsory to wear masks in most indoor settings, except for pubs and restaurants, and the introduction of mandatory COVID passes to enter large venues like nightclubs. 54 people working in Winchester's tourism and hospitality have written to MP Steve Bryan expressing objections to lockdown policies. The letter, headed by Group Coordinator Gerry Adamson, said, "We are deeply concerned that the lockdowns have been introduced in England, Scotland and Wales and Northern Ireland. We believe that all lockdown restrictions should be withdrawn immediately and they must never be introduced in the UK. As you know, the economy and well-being of Winchester hugely depends on tourism and hospitality industry. The pubs, restaurants, Royal Hampshire County Hospital and many care homes are employing local residents whose livelihoods are negatively affected by Coronavirus Act 2020. The new measures have sparked concerns from business leaders in the city. Speaking about the possibility of stricter COVID measures prior to the government vote, Ben Woolis, manager of St James's Tavern in Romsey Road, said, "The new measures would be a death sentence for the hospitality industry. It has already ruined Christmas bookings. We don't want a repeat of what happened last Christmas. We are losing revenue, even though there are no current restrictions. People have been postponing Christmas bookings because they don't know what will happen, and this has meant we've had to throw away food in some instances." Winchester BID Executive Director Paul Spencer added, "Following the announcement of Plan B, the government should be introducing further financial assistance to those sectors most affected. The new measures, and in particular the work from home guidance, significantly impacts consumer confidence. It discourages people from visiting towns and city centres during the critical festive trading period and will signal to many people that they should not be going into work or visiting pubs, bars and restaurants and shops, likely resulting in cancellation of bookings for Christmas parties and gatherings and a difficult January for retail, hospitality and leisure sectors. If any further restrictions were to be introduced, then financial support would be absolutely critical to soften the blow to Christmas trading. Mr. Bryan voted against COVID passports and abstained from the vote on wearing of masks. He told the Chronicle following the vote, 'As I have said for a long time, we need to mean it when we say we should learn to live with COVID and we would need to trust our vaccines.' It comes as the government of officials have reportedly drawn up plans to restrict numbers in pubs and restaurants or even close them completely in the weeks leading up to Christmas. Along with the tighter measures, Prime Minister Boris Johnson addressed the nation on Sunday, opening up booster jabs to all eligible over 18-year-olds before the end of the year. Since then, the NHS and the COVID booster jab booking programme has faced extremely high demand, with some having to travel far longer for their third jabs than for previous doses. Ian Dunn, 58, from Harestock Close, will have to travel 22 miles to Luggershall in Wiltshire on Sunday for his booster jab, despite previously having his first two at the Badger Farm Vaccination Centre. Not hearing anything from the surgery, Mr Dunn checked his NHS website. I have been trying the website and I have been getting until today, Monday, when they have obviously put some more places available. I have been getting haven't for the 29th of December and things like that. That is quite a long way to go. I thought this is ridiculous. I've got Friarsgate Vaccination Centre in Badgers Farm and I can't get access to it at all. It is never an option on the website to book. You can only book via the doctors. Dr. Matt Nesbitt, of a GP partner and clinical lead for Hampshire and the Isle of Wight COVID-19 vaccination programme, has reassured the public that all over 18-year-olds in Hampshire are going to be able to get a booster by the end of December. However, he asked for people to be patient while the programme is expanding, adding, "It is of course going to take us a little bit of time to work our way through the cohorts as we have done in the past and to expand the programme in a way that the Prime Minister has asked us to. So thank you for bearing with us. We will get round to you."
A new collection of dinosaurs is heading to Marwell Zoo. And this article is accompanied by an absolutely fantastic photograph of a dinosaur that must be 2 metres tall and in beautiful, beautiful colours. Marwell Zoo will unveil a world-first event featuring an all-new collection of 55 dinosaur sculptures. Brachiosaurus Evolution is set to showcase over 20 species made using more than 2 million toy bricks. The interactive expedition, which will be on display alongside the zoo's hundreds of resident endangered and exotic animals, is sure to excite families, brick and dinosaur enthusiasts alike. Sean Manny, commercial director at Marwell, said, "We're incredibly excited to announce that dinosaurs will once again be returning to Marwell Zoo with the all-new collection, Brachiosaurus Evolution, next year, which also marks Marwell's 50th anniversary. These incredible sculptures, on display around our beautiful 140-acre park, will be immersive, educational, and bursting with colour. Plus, there will be lots of fun and special touches to give it the wow factor. I have no doubt Brachiosaurus Evolution will make Marwell a must-see family day out for 2022, as families look for exciting new adventures to share, and we'll be unveiling more details soon, so watch this space. Visitors will go back in time, and some face-to-face, or come face-to-face, with prehistoric creatures such as the 7-metre-long Spinosaurus, a nodding Heterodontosaurus, and a huge Monosaur emerging from the water. Brightbricks worker Ed Dement works on a life-size T-Rex model made out of Lego, and it's Ed that's shown in the picture working on the model.
Rethink over Council's plans for River Park. Councillors are trying to force a rethink of plans for the redundant River Park Leisure Centre in Winchester. The City Council is currently proposing to lease the site off Gordon Road to Southampton University, sparking criticism that it would privatise the area. Other suggested uses include a Lido, open-air swimming pool and a concert hall. Now the Conservative group is calling for the proposal to be called in by the Cabinet and re-examined. The Tories argue, A, there's been no consultation with residents and councillors regarding the site, B. There has been no consultation made by Cabinet at any time, particularly about the selling off of the land at below market value or the waiving of the rights of residents in relation to land ownership. And C. Financial procedure rules have not been followed. The site was acquired by the council in 1902 to be used as a public park, and a legal covenant remains on the site restricting its use. Group leader Caroline Horrell said, "Although not against the University of Southampton's interest in the site, we are challenging the processes used by the administration, which we believe have been made behind closed doors." Public opposition is organising against the council proposal with a relaunch of Save the Rec, which helped to stop the expansion of the leisure centre onto the cricket pitch in 2013-14. Save the Rec says there will be a loss to the public as the campus at the School of Art is not open to the public and is a private commercial concern with fee-paying students, and its purpose is education. It argues that the plans breach the 1902 covenant because the university building would not usually be open to the public and it is a private commercial concern. The leisure centre would be demolished and the land leased to the university for an expansion of its School of Art campus. The proposal is for an initial lockout 5-year lease, followed by a 150-year lease to Southampton University. The old leisure centre at River Park, which was built in the 1970s, closed in January this year, with the new centre on Bar End Road having opened in May. And there's a picture of River Park Leisure Centre, all boarded up sadly, and an inset picture of Caroline Horrell leading the opposition to it. Well, that concludes the headlines, and now we have the death announcements, followed by Christian comment, letters to the editor, historical items, chronicle comment, first person, and Belgarum. So we start with the death announcements. Cook, Andrew Cook, who died on the 2nd of September. Fleming, David John Fleming, died on the 5th of December, aged 79. And Wade, Catherine Wade, known as Kitty, died peacefully at Brendon Care on the 11th of December, aged 98. And now we have a Christian comment, please, Andrew.
And this week's Christian comment is titled "A Meditation on Mystery of Time," and was written by Rosemary A. Barker. Now that the Christmas lights go up before Remembrance Sunday, it seems that the 4 weeks of Advent preparation for the celebration of the birth of Christ are redundant. Thanks to the whirl of December carol services, it's been noted that there are two parallel times in this season. Outwardly, there is a time in which the Church engages in mission and proclamation, welcoming those who would celebrate alongside their Christmas shopping, something to do with the birth of the Christ child. This proclamation opens to them something of the depths of Christmas, even at the cost of anticipation of the feast. But inwardly, there is a time in which the Church makes her Advent preparation. What are we doing in this hidden time? What is this preparation? Advent looks back in order to look forward. Celebration of the first coming of Christ in the stable at Bethlehem has meaning and purpose because of hope and expectation of Christ's second coming. Christmas is not a sterile memorial of a thing past and gone, but effective preparation for what is to come. Have you sent your cards and done your shopping? If even our Christmas cheer cannot adequately express our love for our relatives, friends, and neighbours, how much less can we adequately express our love for God? So Advent begins in penitence. Its colour is purple, the symbol for Christians of preparation and forgiveness. We reflect on our lives and realise our inadequacies. But we do not remain focused on ourselves, for Advent calls us to look joyfully to God, who is coming to complete his salvation. Advent hymns and readings are therefore full of happy expectation of Christ coming again, Yet it's important to remember that we do not know the day nor the hour. Advent calendars and Advent candles count down towards Christmas Day. But the true message of Advent is to be ready now. So we turn again to God's grace, for we can never be ourselves by ourselves be ready. Advent causes us to change our attitude to our lives, which are set in a proper perspective, seen from their end. When I did my ministerial training, we were asked to write our own obituary. I remember doing this on a train to London. I started off with a list of the honours I'd like to have achieved. Then we went through Clapham Junction. And I remember the crash there and realised how flippant and unrealistic I was being. Yesterday, I listened to a funeral of a surgeon I had been at university. And as I heard about his life, I reflected that this was a fitting end and tribute that I would be happy to have as my own. The great symbol of Advent is the increase of light. Candles are lit in ever greater number, in growing expectation of the end. Advent is an extended meditation on the mystery of time. We look back to the moment of the Incarnation, the pivot around which world history turns, in order to see the meaning of the flow of the events of human history towards their fulfillment. Assessing the importance of human events in this light gives hope, even in the face of disaster and the failure of our rules and regulations, which are then seen in their proper perspective.
Thank you, Andrew. Now we move on to letters to the editor, and the first one is from Phil Yates regarding the City Road bus stops, which refers back to an article in last week's paper. So I refer to Belgarum's column, chronicled December the 9th, where he or she queries the number of bus stops in City Road. Are there too many? The answer is no. I appreciate they're not very attractive, and I sympathise with the residents of the houses immediately looking down on them, but they are essential. There are four junctions leading off City Road used by buses, i.e. Station Hill, Stockbridge Road, Andover Road and Worthy Lane, branching off from Andover Road. All these lead to destinations provided by public transport, i.e. Oliver's Battery in Romsey, Tegdown, Stockbridge, Andover, Kingsworthy, Itchenabbas, Worthy Lane leading to Worthy Road. There are so many other destinations I haven't mentioned, but believe you me, there are many more surrounding areas where passengers rely on catching a bus at one of the stops in City Road. There, I rest my case. Having aired my views, I wish Belgarum, the editor and staff of the Hampshire Chronicle, a Merry Christmas and a peaceful New Year. And this applies to all readers and subscribers of the paper. And that's from Phil Yates, Tower Street, Winchester. And there is a picture of the three bus stops along City Road. As it says, they all advertise McDonald's. The thing that amazes me about the picture is there's only one car in the picture. I've no idea when they took that photograph, because usually it's jam-packed with traffic.
Jack Thompson. Sir, congratulations on a superb obituary which you printed in your December the 2nd edition. It was a fitting tribute to a great public servant of Winchester as a director of planning for the city for 16 years. I was privileged to attend his funeral on December the 9th in order to represent the 1980s City Council management team, which he served with distinction for some years. He had always contributed to the team with intelligence and a considerable humour, despite his main interest always being in planning. He was a popular director among what was then a highly qualified group of professionals. Jack always had one regret about his professional career, which was his frustration at not becoming the county planning officer, which was a logical next step career for his great success at Winchester. He put this down to his being effectively blocked by the then all-powerful leader of the Hampshire County Council, Emery Wallace, who subsequently fell from grace and served a prison sentence, and that was from Simon Cook, Director of Leisure and Amenities, Winchester City Council, 1980 to 1990, Shepherdstown, Alresford.
And this letter is from Ian Tate and is titled Do Something. Sir, you are regularly publishing articles and letters expressing opinions about how the Central Winchester Regeneration Project should be driven forward. The City Council continues to pay large sums to consultants, yet we still seem a long way off understanding what will actually happen to this rundown section of the city. Having been a member of the Cabinet back in 2014 when the Henderson scheme was live, I strongly supported their proposals. With the lengthening passage of time since that scheme was derailed, I feel more convinced that the Council should have persevered with its legal challenge of the procurement route. At the time, we were told by the Winchester Deserves Better Brigade that a rethink could be done quickly, with little more than a 2-year delay to the regeneration of the area. Like much of what this group said, this turned out to be completely false. I have argued strongly that the Friarsgate Medical Centre could be redeveloped immediately. A scheme with the adjoining landowner St John's could come forward very quickly for additional almshouse accommodation alongside high-quality apartments for downsizers. This would kickstart the whole regeneration project and could deliver an exemplar development in a very prominent location. In Winchester, we seem to believe that consultation is an end in itself, rather than a means to an end. And so I feel strongly that we must lance the boil of Silver Hill and get on and do something constructive here very quickly, or yet more public money will be wasted. And that's from Ian Tate, St James's Lane, Winchester.
And this letter is from Simon Lever, headed Village Greens. Sir, village greens are an integral part of a community, providing an area which should be protected ad infinitum. Coles Mead in Otterbourne being a classic example. Another community green at high risk of development is the Davis Kickabout in Badger Farm, overlooking a kiddies play area and White Chute Ridge. Building on irreplaceable green areas should be banned by a permanent ruling which cannot be overturned. Should either of these green areas be built upon, the damage to local residents would be formidable. The region in which we live is of outstanding natural beauty. Village greens are a centre of calmness and serenity. Let's not take this for granted. And that letter was from Simon Lever, Juniper Close, Badger Farm.
And Lorraine Bennett writes, Oldie Deja Vu. Sir, I had a deja vu moment this morning when I read Roger Mallin's letter, chronicled December the 9th, relating to a parking fine levied at his friend for overstaying the parking time at a branch of Aldi. My friend had an identical experience when she visited Aldi's Amesbury branch. She overstayed the free parking time and received a parking fine which included a photograph of her on arrival. My friend decided to pay the initial amount due, £40, if paid immediately, and sent her cheque together with a copy of her receipt, which showed she had in fact been shopping the whole time Aldi claimed. She also included a letter stating she had been unaware of the short time permit for the free parking. Fortunately, within a short time, she received a communication from Aldi's parking contractor, Parking I, which enclosed a full refund of the £40 fine. It may well be that Mr. Mallin's friend should speak with the store again or contact Parking I, confirming the parking ticket had been taken by a member of Aldi's staff. Good luck. And that was from Lorraine Bennett, Lyndhurst Road, Ashurst, New Forest.
And from Giles Gooding, Clean Air. Sir, I was very pleased to read that Councillor Ratcliffe is concerned about the levels of air pollution in Winchester and pressing for action to reduce traffic in the city. Traffic is the biggest cause of these pollutants, and I must point out that electric vehicles won't completely solve the problem, since they will continue to emit particle pollution from tyres and brakes. The only way to substantially increase air quality is, as Councillor Ratcliffe says, to reduce traffic, but he is living in cloud cuckoo land, thinking it can be done by calling on bus companies to increase services and incentivise parking outside the city centre. We do need a better bus service, but bus companies will only increase services where they can make money or are subsidised, and cars will continue to come into the city centre unless you deter them. Winchester City Council has within its power to close city centre car parks, increase parking charges, both resident and public, introduce a congestion charge, and a workplace parking levy. Coupled with bus and cycle lanes are streets with rising bollards to improve bus journey times and increase cycle parking. These would go a long way to reduce traffic. The ultimate aim is for the council to run its own bus service, which it has the option to do, like the very successful regular services provided in Reading. Councillor Ratcliffe has got the right idea, but I urge him and other councillors to now get on with it and make our air breathable again. And I suspect this letter could also attract a counterposition as well, but it was from Giles Gooding, Fordington Avenue, Fulflood.
Okay, that concludes the letters, and now we have the Chronicle editorial comment, headed, "Time to hold our nerve over COVID." Stark warnings have been issued that the UK could soon see 1 million new cases of coronavirus a week, as high as at any time since the first lockdown. There will be some who say we should go into another lockdown to protect the NHS. This would be a mistake, particularly because of the economic impact in a city such as Winchester that depends on the hospitality sector. Now is the time we must hold our collective nerve and rely on the vaccination programme. To do otherwise would run the risk of derailing the economy in a catastrophic way. The economy was saved the last time during the lockdown by the unprecedented furlough scheme, but there is unlikely to be a furlough two. One thing is becoming clearer, however. As well as public anger over the behaviour of certain politicians last Christmas, there is growing resentment against the selfish minority who refuse to be vaccinated. Personal choice only goes so far. Our personal choice is curtailed when we see a red traffic light, for example. Much more should be done to encourage the anti-vaxxers to see the error of their ways and start to act for the greater good. Now, Norma, we've got first person, I think, please.
Yes. Mr. Sunak and climate blunder. And this is by George Hayter. Chancellor of the Exchequer, Rishi Sunak, born and brought up in Hampshire, is a local lad we can all admire. His CV reads like a dictionary definition of success. After being head boy at boarding school, he went to Oxford, then won a scholarship to study for an MBA at Stanford University in America. After that, he joined megabank Goldman Sachs before becoming a partner in a hedge fund. Then he married a billionaire's daughter and became an MP for one of the safest Tory seats in Britain. The Prime Minister appointed him right-hand man to Chancellor Sajid Javid, and when Javid abruptly resigned just months later, Mr. Sunak took his place. At age 39, he has become the second most powerful man in Britain. Rishi was once one of us in Winchester. His home was Southampton, and he won a scholarship to the elite £14,000 a term Winchester College. Despite his meteoric career, brilliant Rishi occasionally stumbles. His 2021 budget speech was acclaimed on the day, but later criticised as misleading because it gave the impression that he was reducing tax. The fine print revealed that he was raising tax. Rishi failed to support the UK's hosting of last month's Glasgow UN Climate Change Conference. World opinion is increasingly demanding action to reduce greenhouse gases, and experts were urging the meeting to reduce emissions. All the conference achieved, as far as I can make out, was global agreement to continue as we are, merely slowing the rate of increase in emissions, not actually cutting them until it will be too late. Shouldn't the host country of the climate conference have demonstrated its commitment to the drastic policy shifts it needed? Indeed, in the run-up to the meeting, the UK government announced it was going to open a new coal mine. I don't suppose that put much pressure on China or India. And what did our man Rishi do just 4 weeks before the conference? Unveiled tax cuts to encourage air travel and boost petrol and diesel consumption. He reduced tax on domestic flights, and that will encourage people to fly instead of going by rail. Fortunately, he did slap a tax on long-haul flights, but only to the very longest routes, mainly those to Australia or the Far East. He cancelled a scheduled increase in fuel duty, which would have discouraged use of petrol and diesel and encouraged switching to electric vehicles. At Glasgow, the Conservatives missed the chance to make Britain a world climate change leader. Rishi is the cabinet minister in charge of tax, and tax is the key tool for changing public behaviour. I used to help myself to plastic bags every time I did my weekly shop. Then the government put a 5p and later 10p tax on each bag, and since then I've bought very few. Nationally, consumption of supermarket bags has dropped by 95%. That is the persuasion of tax. A clever guy like Rishi realises global warming is a bigger threat to the world than COVID. He should use his control of taxation to persuade citizens to help save the planet. You and I can do little if we act alone. I've reduced my driving and I have turned down my central heating, but that will make little difference unless Britain's other 50 million adults do something similar. Tax is the best way of persuading them. I'm not saying that the total tax burden should go up. If tax on damaging activities goes up, a tax on harmless activities should go down. There could be a compensatory cut in VAT, for example. And for the poor who pay little tax, compensation for higher tax on fossil fuels could come through more generous benefits. Leadership has always been highly prized at Winchester College. As head boy there, Rishi must have shown leadership. He must do that again now for the sake of the planet.
And now a couple of articles from Bulgarum, an alternative look at the news. And the first one is good news, although I suppose if you're a vegetarian it might not be such good news. The best sausage contest returns. Hampshire Fair, the county food and drink group, has announced the return of the Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition for 2022. The Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition was last held in 2020, with the awards ceremony shortly before the first lockdown. With consideration given to the safety of judges and competitors, it was decided not to hold the competition in 2021. However, it is returning in the new year with new categories and new venues. Tracy Nash, commercial manager of Hampshire Fair, said, "We are very proud of the Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition, which has attained national prestige. We regularly receive inquiries about entry criteria from across the country. However, although our competition has national clout, it is only open to entrants within Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, including members and non-members of Hampshire Fair. One of our regular entrants, which is the Crow Farm Shop Ringwood, having repeatedly won the title champion for their pork pies, was singled out for inclusion on Remarkable Places to Eat in the New Forest on BBC TV due to their award-winning pies. The Great Hampshire Sausage and Pie Competition's champion certificate was shown on the screen. That is the value and standing of this competition. And this is accompanied by a photograph of the Sausage and Pie Awards in 2020. And I do note, actually, that I think they're all male. There's probably about a dozen male guys there, all holding their trophies for having made champion pies and sausages. Very tasty, too. The second article comes back to a subject we touched on a little bit earlier, which is the city road and bus stops are needed. Hampshire County Council has told Belgarham why three bus stops are needed on City Road. In a statement, it said, City Road, one of the key and busiest roads into Winchester city centre, and as the highway authority, we have the duty to keep traffic and buses flowing and support making bus services easy to access for passengers. There are two reasons for having more than one stop spaced out along the road. Firstly, traffic management. If one bus is at the front of the stopping space and another bus is behind it, the second bus would have difficulty setting off safely if the first bus is still waiting for the passengers to alight. Or, if a stopping space is full, a third bus cannot safely stop, and this can result in traffic being blocked. Cramming bus stops together into a smaller space can often make a traffic situation worse, not better. Secondly, having specific stops for different services helps to make it clear to passengers which stop they should wait at for their destination. Having one stop would require space to be sufficiently long enough for a high number of passengers and could lead to confusion and risk passengers boarding the wrong bus. In conclusion, having separate stops improves clarity for passengers, congestion is kept to a minimum, and buses do not need to attempt to carry out potentially unsafe manoeuvres on what can be a very busy road.
Thank you. And now we move on to announcements. Lighting up time ends Friday the 17th of December at 8:04 a.m. and begins at 3:59 p.m. Next week on Wednesday the 22nd of December, it ends at 8:07 a.m. and begins at 4:01 p.m. And if you know someone who is sight impaired and would like to receive our recordings, or if you have a problem with the recording you've received from us, please telephone the contact number on the key fob that's attached to the memory stick. And now we continue with further items of general news.
Hyde shop plan. The planning application for work on the former Hyde News Agency has been submitted to Winchester City Council. The property at 34 Hyde Street was vacated by its previous tenant at the beginning of November, with work planned to make alterations to the rear of the building, but to keep the original shop frontage. The company called 34 Hyde Street Limited purchased the property and is looking for potential buyers to run a business there and to potentially live in the flat above as well. The planning application was submitted by the director of 34 Hyde Street Limited, Guy Macklin. It says, partial change of use for commercial space to residential purposes within the existing mixed-use building, retaining commercial floor space to ground floor rooms to the front of the building, rear extension and internal alterations, enclosure and gate along the south boundary. When Mr. Macklin spoke to the Chronicle last month, he said that it was important to the company to keep the shop frontage, as it had a long-standing legacy in the area, with a shop first opening in the property in 1894. It was then acquired by Edith Best in 1925 and was managed by her son Leonard and then by his son Eric. The shop, which is at 34 Hyde Street, was closed during the war, and then it reopened. It became a news agency.
Filming of The Crown returns. Stars of the popular Netflix series The Crown were spotted filming in Winchester on Monday. Crews for the streaming giant's drama were seen in the city on College Street. According to one passerby, actors playing Princess Diana and Prince Charles were being filmed in a Jaguar XJ8. The scenes being filmed are for Series 5 of The Crown, out in November next year. The show last came to Winchester in January 2020, when production was set up at the cathedral to shoot two films, The Funeral of Lord Mountbatten and Charles and Diana's Wedding. In 2018, filming took place at the Guildhall, and in January 2016, it also shot several scenes of early shows in the Winchester College area around the Wickham Arms. The Crown stars, Olivia Colman and Helena Bonham Carter, filming Netflix hit in Winchester. Last week, the series was spotted filming in Eastbourne, featuring an actor bearing a striking resemblance to Martin Bashir, the disgraced former BBC journalist who previously lived in Winchester. According to the Daily Mail, actor Prasani Puwanaraja was filming scenes for the Netflix drama that recreate the time of Bashir's deceitfully arranged, or recreating the time of Bashir's deceitfully arranged panorama interview with Princess Diana in 1995.
City Council still getting it wrong over Silver Hill. Winchester civic chiefs have again come under fire from former rebel councillor over the redevelopment of Silver Hill. Kim Gottlieb's legal action in 2016 scuppered the first redevelopment scheme, and he fears the council is again heading in the wrong direction. He raised his concerns at the City Council Scrutiny Committee, which gave feedback to the Cabinet, set to approve the business case for the new scheme. Mr. Gottlieb told councillors, "I've been campaigning on Silver Hill for 10 years, and I fear I'll be here another 10 years, because after decades of disappointment, the project is still heading in the wrong direction, and the strategy proposed for its development will not lead to success." Mr. Gottlieb, himself a property developer, argues that many developers will be put off, not least by the issue of the site's archaeology. The council has not committed to a major excavation, such as with the nearby Brooks Centre in the late 1980s. The scrutiny committee was looking at the business case for the scheme and making recommendations to Cabinet, which will consider it on Wednesday, December the 22nd. The City of Winchester Trust also has concerns. Richard Baker said a master plan needed to be developed to properly guide development. New ideas were emerging ad hoc, such as a hotel.
New businesses unit welcome fire service. Winchester City Council has completed the construction of three industrial units in Bishop's Waltham. The council has let the first unit on the Lower Lane site to Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service. Firefighters will move into the site whilst a new station is built on their existing premises on Ho Road. The new development saw the demolition of the 1950s warehouses. Initial work was undertaken in September 2020, and the construction of the three light industrial units was completed this month. The £1.5 million investment includes 78 roof-mounted photovoltaic panels to ensure the high sustainability, as well as three electric vehicle charging points and the installation of low-energy LED light system. Councillor Kelsey Lerney, Cabinet Member for the Housing and Asset Management, said, "I am pleased that the development in Bishop's Waltham is now complete and that our first lease is to the Hampshire and Isle of Wight Fire and Rescue Service. The new industrial units have been designed to support businesses in the southern parishes of the district, providing high quality, energy efficient, light industrial accommodation in a popular market town.
Famous university alumni to star on University Challenge. And this article is accompanied by a fine picture of the Winchester team. They've got their Nicole Farley, Mike Bushell, Sappy Koshandi, and our chum Dirk Maggs, all looking very splendid, all with their university scarves on. It's a question of fingers on buzzers as a team of famous University of Winchester alumni take part in Christmas University Challenge 2021. Each year, nearly 3 million viewers watch the special series of Christmas University Challenge on BBC Two, where teams of graduates from UK universities face the formidable quizmaster and broadcaster Jeremy Paxman. The Winchester lineup is Dirk Maggs, writer and director for audio drama, the stage, games, film and television, BBC Breakfast sports presenter Mike Bushell, Nicole Farley, the first full-time female coach appointed at Premier League club West Ham, and stand-up comedian Shaparak Koshandi, who is the team captain. Dirk Maggs said, "It was a great honour for us to be asked to represent the University of Winchester in Christmas University Challenge, and truly nerve-wracking to sit across the studio from Jeremy Paxman, whose acid humour actually conceals a very warm personality. We thoroughly enjoyed the experience once it was underway, and the floor manager told us afterwards that our team was the most fun they'd had in the competition. The opposing teams were jealous of our university scarves too." The programme airs at 8:30 p.m. on Tuesday, December 21st on BBC Two, when the Winchester team battles the University of Bradford.
Residents oppose vineyard plans. A Hampshire vineyard which wants a licence to sell alcohol has received 27 objections to the application from local people. Exton Park Vineyard have applied to sell alcohol on the premises 7 days a week from 11 a.m. to 11 p.m. The application was due to be discussed at the Winchester City Council Licensing Subcommittee meeting on December the 1st, but that has now been postponed to January the 31st. The vineyard is located in the hamlet of Exton in the South Downs National Park. It's built on chalky soil on 60 acres of land. The City Council has received 27 objections to the plans, with many saying it will be a public nuisance and that the narrow roads would not be suitable to accommodate more people visiting the area. Jeremy and Amanda Berwick of Church Lane said, "The opening of the vineyard to allow the sale of alcohol on the premises up to 11 p.m. every evening will increase traffic travelling through our village." Councillor Hugh Lumby, County Councillor for the Meon Valley, also sent an objection. He provided a suggestion on how the licence could be changed. He said, "Exton Park is an important local business producing excellent sparkling wines and is one I'm keen that Winchester City Council should support. If the licence is to be granted, that it be conditioned to the specific uses intended rather than being too broad." In response to the concerns, Exton Park Vineyard's Managing Director Kit Allen said, "Unlike other vineyards across the South Downs, we do not have a visitor centre, nor are we open to the general public for tours or loud parties. The licence that we hope to secure simply allows us to host a small number of private events and some high-end corporate clients. We are confident that concerns about traffic will diminish."
COVID lockdown sees boost in discoveries. Hampshire is still one of the country's hot spots for treasure finds, with dozens of discoveries made last year. Fortune hunters and metal detectorists made 71 discoveries in 2020. Data from the British Museum and the Department for Digital, Cultural, Media and Sport shows. The country's second biggest haul. It means A total of 523 fines have been reported in Hampshire since records began in 2012, the figures show. Across England, Wales and Northern Ireland, the number of treasure fines topped 1,000 for the seventh year in a row in 2020, and 1,077 were recorded last year. The British Museum said the restrictions on people's exercise during coronavirus lockdowns contributed to a boost in unexpected garden discoveries last year. More than 6,000 fines, which could include a single object or a hoard of coins, were recorded with the museum's portable antiquities scheme during the first lockdown alone, when hunting with a metal detector outside the home was banned. Former Cultural Minister and Hampshire MP Caroline Dynage said it was brilliant to see the scheme grow from strength to strength during lockdown thanks to garden finds and digital reporting. Anyone who thinks they have struck a hidden hoard has to tell the coroner within 2 weeks so they can hold an inquest to decide whether it constitutes treasure and who will receive the items. If they don't, they face the unlimited fine or up to 3 months behind bars. Local and national museums are given the chance to purchase any piece a coroner rules as treasure, but the finder doesn't leave empty-handed. They will be paid a sum depending on the haul's value. In 2020, 247 treasure fines were reported across the South East. The Treasury Act currently defines treasure as finds older than 300 years and made of gold or silver, or artefacts made of precious metals. But the government announced in December 2020 that a new definition would be introduced to protect treasure from being lost to the public. It could see artefacts also defined as treasure if they are of historical or cultural significance. Metal detecting is the best way to unearth lost treasure, according to the figures. The devices tracked down 96% of finds in 2019, the most recent year with details on how objects were discovered. A further 3%, 36 cases, were archaeological finds, and 10 from field walking or scouring streams and shores. Police recovered one treasure trove from a night hawker, an illegal treasure hunter. And there's a picture of a gentleman's hand with a load of gold coins, and it's part of a Roman coin hoard found at Snodland in North Kent by a digger driver.
And this is a review of this year's panto, Aladdin, at the Theatre Royal Winchester. A pantomime with style and grace. It's a wonderful part of Christmas tradition that was one of the many things missing from our lives last year. Now, as we look to the future with some renewed hope, albeit with the backdrop of impending passports, mask wearing and working from home, Aladdin has burst onto the stage with its bright sets, poo jokes and a storyline that draws you in. Yes, even Wishy-Washy himself, played by the excellent babe magnate Ed Thorpe, admits that he gets lost a bit by the tale of Aladdin, but that's okay. Most people do. All you need to know is that it all works out well in the end. We all end up feeling a bit sympathy for Sergeant Pooh with his misguided love, obviously after laughing at his own misfortune. And we loved it when Ricky Chamberlain transforms into the genie, a role that plays homage to the legendary Robbie Williams. With Aladdin, played by Libby Gore, a female actor playing a male role, and Widow Twankey, played by Julian Edley, a male playing the dame, as is panto tradition, there are plenty of opportunities for gender-swapping gags. So yes, it's a panto, so the comedy does veer into the gutter, or toilet at times, but Aladdin does so with style and grace. The humour is actually humorous, and managed to stay on the right side of political correctness. So there's not too much to explain to the kids afterwards. My personal star of the show was the fantastically evil Abanaza. Or should that be Ave Banana? or Have a Gardener, played by Ben Tolley, who takes on the villain role with a poshness fit for the historic Winchester setting. His song, Bad Man, where he bursts into a sax solo, being my top song. All in all, the show ends like any good panto should. Boy gets girl, or in this case, girl gets girl. Whatever it is, all the stars erupt on the stage for a stunning red finale. It's great family fun, and with the brilliant setting of the newly renovated Theatre Royal as its backdrop, should make for an excellent festive outing. And this is accompanied by a photograph of Aladdin, who looks absolutely tremendous in that costume, and I'm sure it's well worth attending if we can.
Abysmal pay is an obstacle for care workers. A campaign to recruit more social workers is being undercut by an inability to boost wages, a councillor has said. In October, Hampshire County Council launched its Call to Care campaign in a bid to encourage more people to work in care homes and domiciliary care. At the time, there were almost 100 temporary and full-time vacancies on the County Council and Connect to Hampshire websites. A further 22 employee contracts were terminated at the mandatory COVID-19 vaccination deadline last month. But the County Council has remained tight-lipped on how many new starters have come in since the campaign began, as well as the current number of vacancies. Executive Member for Public Health and Social Care, Councillor Liz Fairhurst, said, "Let's say there have been some green shoots and that we'll keep trying. We've seen more people coming forward, but across the sector there's a major need for more staff. We would welcome applications from anyone. It can be a really rewarding job. But the problem is that you can earn more working in a supermarket or behind a bar. Perhaps private sector care homes could provide a cash bonus for new employees, like some other businesses are doing." Councillor Fairhurst added that some areas of the care sector are faring better than others. Opposing Liberal Democrat spokesman for Health and Social Care, Councillor David Harrison, said, "The abysmal pay is the main obstacle to recruitment." He said, "I'm not surprised they're struggling to recruit. The biggest issue is the level of pay, and every time the sector gets a boost, wages get overlooked. The government can invest all it likes into care facilities and training, but if people can earn more money as a self-employed dog walker, it's a no-brainer. What's worse is the County Council is having to make savings of £80 million at the moment just to balance the books. So I don't think we'll be in any position to increase pay in the near future."
Solutions still awaited to dangerous garden wall. A woman who has been unable to use her garden or garage at her home near Winchester since February 2020 because of a dangerous wall is still awaiting for a solution. The Chronicle recently reported that Emily Milne of Maytree Close in Badgers Farm has been trying to get compensation for the inconvenience to the broken wall has caused her young family. Also, housing company A2 Dominion stated last month that the wall would be propped up to reduce the risk to people living nearby. However, Ms. Milne said that this is yet to be done. She said, "I have given up. Still nothing has been done about the wall. No scaffolding has been put up, like A2 Dominion stated. No compensation, still no garden or garage. The wall is owned by a private tenant. However, the wall owner has been unable to do anything as they were given a £20,000 quote for the wall to be fixed." Miss Milne said, "They have accepted me back to the Hampshire Home Choice for another two-bedroomed, but my son is 10 next December, so that just seems a lot of hassle and a lot of expense to move from a two-bedroomed to another two-bedroomed, then to have to move again to a three-bedroomed. The money is going to cost to move and decorate another two-bedroom would be crazy. I may as well wait until my son turns 10 in December 2022 and then move to a three-bedroom. What's another year without a garden and garage? Dawn Whiteman, Director of Housing at A2 Dominion, said, "I appreciate that this is a very frustrating situation and would like to assure our residents that we are doing all we can to resolve it fully. The wall in question is not the property of A2 Dominion, so we cannot carry out full repair ourselves. However, we are working with the local authority and the owners to resolve this as soon as possible, and we've made it clear that we are willing to contribute to the cost of the repairs. We have also agreed support through the local authority housing register as an option available to affected residents if they wish to move home."
Night Shelter has appointed the Dean as its new patron. The Winchester Beacon announced the Very Reverend Catherine Ogle, Dean of Winchester, as its new patron. Dean Catherine will be taking over from the Bishop of Winchester, the Right Reverend Tim Dakin, on his retirement early next year. The appointment comes as the charity, formerly known as the Winchester Church's Night Shelter, has been renamed the Winchester Beacon to better reflect the charity's work, which has evolved to become far more than being just a safe place to stay for a night. "I am really pleased and proud to be taking over as the patron," said Dean Catherine. "There is a real heart to the work of the charity supporting those who have fallen on bad times, something which could happen to any of us. There has been a long and great relationship between the charity, the cathedral, and the local churches, and I'm really pleased that this is carrying on. I hope that we will continue to be a real beacon to many people in our city, and particularly those who are in need. Aware that the pandemic has put a growing number of people at risk of homelessness, the Winchester Beacon has been working hard to increase capacity. The recent purchase of a 4-bedroom property will enable the charity to accommodate 22 people across 4 sites. The Winchester Beacon is appealing for help this Christmas. More information about ways to support people experiencing homelessness in Hampshire can be found at www.winchesterbeacon.org.uk.
Parents urged to get flu jabs. Hampshire parents and carers are being urged to protect toddlers against the flu. The flu vaccination programme is well underway across Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, with thousands of parents and carers having already arranged for their children to be vaccinated. As a result of COVID-19 restrictions, influenza activity levels were extremely low globally last year. But with social mixing and social contact returning towards pre-pandemic norms, it's expected that this will be the first winter that flu and COVID-19 will co-circulate. It's also anticipated there may be a higher rate of flu infection. If you get flu and COVID-19 at the same time, research shows you're more likely to be seriously ill. The NHS urged anyone with a 2- or 3-year-old to make an appointment with your GP practice for them to have their flu vaccine. Hampshire GP Dr. Tim Cooper said, "I want to encourage you to get your children vaccinated because the flu is a very common childhood illness and can be really unpleasant for them. Children who are 2 or 3 or eligible 4-year-olds will be able to have their vaccine done at their GP surgery, while school-aged children will be offered theirs in school. The vaccine is a nasal spray, a single spray up each nostril. It's quick, it's painless, and it's really easy. People think it's just flu, but unfortunately it can lead to complications and even hospitalisation, which is why it's important to have the vaccination."
Excess drinking rose in lockdown. Alcohol caused the death of more than 150 people in Hampshire during the first year of the coronavirus pandemic, figures show. Deaths directly caused by excess drinking soared by a record 20% across England in 2020, with thousands of people losing their lives to alcohol consumption. The devastating increase is a stark evidence of the pandemic's impact on people's drinking patterns, according to the charities Drink Aware and Alcohol Change UK. Public Health England data shows that 168 people from Hampshire were among the 6,985 who died from alcohol-specific causes last year. That is up from 108 recorded in 2019. Dr. Richard Piper, Chief Executive of Alcohol Change UK, said, as many as one in four people drank more in 2020, with some picking up habits that could prove hard to break. He called for high-quality early support for those struggling, adding, evidence shows that for many people the pandemic and the restrictions placed on our daily lives led to an increase in drinking. Any one of us can find ourselves drinking harmfully, and everyone deserves to live a full life free from the harm caused by alcohol. Millions more suffer from worsened mental and physical health every day as a result of harmful drinking. The figures suggest 13 in every 100,000 people in England died solely because of alcohol abuse last year, though the rate in Hampshire was lower at 12. During that time, authorities registered a total of 20,500 deaths nationally that were either wholly or partially related to alcohol consumption. 471 people lost their lives for this reason locally. Annabel Bonas, Drinking Aware director, said, damaging drinking habits may have become ingrained.
This is a story about some renovation work that's been carried out on Christchurch, Winchester. Work is finished on the spire of a Winchester church following a 14-week renovation project. Christchurch's vicar, the Reverend Simon Cansdale, believed the work on the 115-year-old spire will keep it in good condition for another century. He said, Christchurch is a Winchester landmark, and our spire's restoration is a sign of the church's commitment to serving the people of Winchester. We continue to provide a welcoming space where we can share God's love with our community. Skilled stonemasons from Sally Strachey Historic Conservation Limited used ladders and ropes to scale the spire. They repointed the stonework, repaired window louvres, and removed and restored and then replaced the uppermost courses of stonework and the metal finial. Christchurch Building Project Coordinator David Ball said, the masons haven't just made the building secure, they have also boosted the diversity in the area by enabling us to install additional swift boxes to support our existing swift colony. The boxes were built and supplied by Hampshire Swiss, who also supplied the swift boxes to the newly opened Winchester Hospice at the Royal Hampshire County Hospital on Rumsey Road. Now, the article is accompanied by a number of photographs against a beautiful blue sky. This has what, as far as I'm concerned, must be the biggest, I suppose you'd call it a cherry picker or an extendable platform. This machine has arms that takes out the working platform way, 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 way up into the sky, right up to the very top of the spire. And then there are a couple of stonemasons working off the platform. It's an absolutely phenomenal piece of machinery to be able to get them to work up there. And, of course, you would need incredible head for heights to be working on that platform. Anyway, the work has been done. And hopefully the spire will be in good condition for another century.
Festival decides to scrap cash and card payments. Festival goers have expressed their anger after organisers have decided to scrap cash and card transactions. Boomtown bosses are replacing cash and card transactions, replacing it with the use of RFID wristband technology. The announcement was made on Facebook and explained how the RFID works, as well as the pros of the technology. Unlike bank cards, the RFID technology that's built into your wristband doesn't rely on Wi-Fi. It's based entirely on a closed-loop system that's not connected to any banks. It allows people to keep track of how much credit they have remaining and also reduces the risk of loss and theft. However, the move has created a stir on social media, with many people against the idea. One social media user said, just like beer tokens at a concert. We have real spendable money for a reason, and it costs nothing to produce, like an RFID wristband, so people have to prepay for drinks and food they might not need. 100% nobody will want that at any festival or event. Another added, had this and it failed at Galtree's festival years ago. People couldn't get their unused credit back, and even after requesting a refund, it either took about 3 months to get it back or just offered credit on the next festival. Another said, don't do it. Download tried it 1 year and it was a disgrace. There's nothing wrong with cards and cash. But some people have welcomed the move, claiming it is a win-win. One person said, I'm totally up for this. I've been to a few other festivals where they've done this and it was absolutely fine. Budget for how much you want to spend. Bar queues are much faster, which is always good. I know I'm not going to lose my cash somewhere. So, win-win. A second added, very happy for this system to be put in place. From previous experience, well, when well managed and organised, it's safer, quicker and less hassle than carrying cash.
Big issue seller featured in street artist's latest work. The artist responsible for murals across Winchester has returned with another piece, this time of big issue seller Kev Colick. The work of anonymous street artist Hendog has popped up at the bus station at Friars Gate entrance. The design shows Kev dressed in a Christmas tree while smiling and pointing. It's not the first time the work of Hendog has popped up in Hampshire, with designs being spotted in Basingstoke and Eastleigh. Winchester has become a hotspot for Hendog's artwork, with 8 of the 13 murals credited to the artist appearing in the city. Most recently, a piece appeared at North Walls Recreation Park on one of the outbuildings. It shows a little girl holding a sparkler. And there's a picture of the wall with Hendog depicted with a Christmas tree sort of draped around his body with Christmas lights on. Very clever. It is.
Very clever. Winchester MUGA numbers criticised. The number of multi-use games areas, MUGAs, in Winchester has been criticised recently by the chief executive of a local community sport group. Emma Back, chief executive Winchester SALT, raised the issue in a recent town forum because there are only 2 MUGAs currently managed by Winchester City Council, which is much fewer than surrounding areas. In comparison, Basingstoke and Deanborough Council manage 20, which is 10 times more than those managed by the City Council in Winchester. Test Valley Borough Council manage 5 MUGAs in Andover, with 0 managed by parish councils. Eastleigh Borough Council have 4 MUGAs in total, 3 run by the Borough Council and 1 by Chandler's Ford Parish Council. The MUGA is a playground for older children, which may have a hybrid football and basketball court. Miss Black explained, the current situation of MUGAs in Winchester. She said, the Winchester town area has only 2 MUGAs. One is in Stanmore at the recreation ground off Cromwell Road, and the other is in Highcliffe, next door to the King George V playing fields, but it's not in very good condition. I understand that the latter is due for repair and refurbishment as part of the King George V play area upgrade. There are 3 MUGAs around Winchester, which are run by parish councils, in Oliver's Battery, Kingsworthy and Compton. Winchester City Council have removed MUGAs in recent years and are yet to replace them. Miss Back said, the City Council has removed other MUGAs and not replaced them. One at North Walls River Park in 2014 and one smaller area of hard standing with a basketball hoop at Westman Road more recently. Carla Holmes are supposed to build a new MUGA as part of the King's Barton development, but this may be several years off. In a recent Winchester Town Forum, Miss Back raised the issue of distance the current MUGAs are from some areas of the city centre. She suggested that new MUGAs need to be built to serve the areas that don't currently have easy access to one. Ms. Beck said, the City Council need to create two new MUGAs, one in the Hyde Abbots Barton area and one in the Weak Takedown area, which would need to serve Fulford as well. The new one at King's Barton will ultimately complement these and ensure that people there and in parts of Hairstock are also within easy walking distance. This is important because MUGAs are most popular with older children and teenagers. And Winchester City Council has been approached for a comment. And this article is accompanied by a photograph of a couple of children, early teenagers, but in wheelchairs. And again, enjoying a game of basketball at one of the MUGAs. This one is in Stanmore.
Tree felling appeal has been quashed. An appeal against council action after a historic woodland was cut down has been quashed. In July this year, an appeal was lodged against action by Eastleigh Borough Council after an area of historic woodland was torn down in Horton Heath. Over the weekend, beginning April the 10th, an area of trees at Scorey's Copse, which were said to be around 100 years old, were pulled down by the landowner without prior permission from the authority. Several of the trees were believed to have tree preservation orders on them, meaning that it cannot be cut down without prior approval. But despite this, the wood was piled up and later set alight. Following this, action was taken by the council against the landowner to demand that all works on the site should stop and no further work could take place without consent from the planning authority. This action also required the tree waste to be removed and the site to be restored to its previous levels. But an appeal was later lodged by the landowner against this, which stated they were unaware of any tree protection orders on the site. Despite this, though, the authority has now confirmed the appeal has been dismissed by the planning inspector, with a claim for costs having also been refused. Now an initial court review is due to take place in December 2021 as part of an ongoing legal process against the owner of the land. Speaking after the decision to refuse the appeal, the council's cabinet lead for environment, Councillor Rupert Kyle, said he was delighted with the dismissal. He added, "Our enforcement, environmental and legal teams worked together to bring about this enforcement that sends a strong message that we will simply not tolerate this sort of flagrant and illegal destruction of our natural environment." As part of the replacement notice for the site, the council has instructed that 650 trees need to be replanted to replace what was pulled down. But in the appeal, the landowner stated this number is unreasonable, claiming that 242 is considered a more reasonable figure. Eastleigh MP Paul Holmes has previously said he has zero sympathy with the appeal, stating that not knowing what protections were in place for the trees is not an acceptable excuse. There have been a number of tree felling incidents this year across the county, including on land near the A32 at Monkwood near Ropley. Men with chainsaws spent several days cutting down mature trees at Woodside Caravan Park in July. The Forestry Commission has said it's investigating. And there's a picture, a rather sad picture really, of trees that have been pulled down at Scorey's Copse. just the stumps remaining. There's a big tree removing machine in the middle just pulling them down, and you can see the remains of them being burnt to one side. Rather a sad picture.
Lifted in time for Christmas. Driving home for Christmas, National Highways has lifted or completed roadworks for the festive getaway. National Highways will be working round the clock to remove more than 900 miles of roadworks ahead of Christmas holidays. This means nearly 98% of motorways and major A-roads will be roadwork free in time for those travelling to see loved ones or making other journeys for Christmas. National Highways travel time data from the past couple of Christmases suggests next Thursday, the day before Christmas Eve, is likely to be one of the busier travel days on England's major A roads and motorway network in the run-up to the festive period. But as many people take advantage of the holidays to visit friends and family, drivers will be happy to hear traffic levels are not expected to be any higher than usual. To help keep festive disruption to a minimum, the vast majority of the roadworks will be removed from England's motorway and major A road networks from 6 a.m. Tuesday, December the 21st, until 12:01 a.m. on Tuesday, January the 4th. To make sure Christmas journeys go as planned, National Highways is encouraging drivers to check traffic conditions before they set off and to make sure that their vehicle is ready for the journey ahead. National Highways Customer Service Director Melanie Clark said, "We don't want roadworks to spoil Christmas, so we are doing everything we can to make journeys as smooth as possible. That's why we're keeping almost 98% of the road network we manage free from roadworks. Our dedicated control room teams and traffic officer patrols are geared up to help those travelling over Christmas period, and we're expecting Thursday, December the 23rd, to be one of the busier days in the lead up to the festive period. We know from experience that peak travel times can be in the run up to Christmas, and so we're encouraging drivers to check traffic conditions before heading out to help keep traffic flowing. And we're also asking motorists to be prepared before setting off. Almost half of breakdowns can easily be avoided if motorists carry out simple vehicle checks before their journey."
And hospital staff were raising funds for the Blood Runners. As part of celebrations for National Pathology Week, staff at Hampshire NHS Foundation Trust, the HHFT, have been busy hosting a bake sale. The pathology department hosted the fundraising event for their charity partners, SERV Wessex, and raised over £500 to say thank you. SERV Wessex Blood Runners deliver blood products, urgent samples and medication from hospital pharmacies. Alex Whitfield, chief executive at the trust that runs hospitals in Andover, Basingstoke and Winchester, said that SERV riders are an amazing group of people. She said, "The SERV riders are a group of amazing people who have worked closely with our trust for a long time. We are so happy to be able to host this bake sale to celebrate and raise money for the SERV charity. It's a small way of saying thank you for the vital service they provide that helps us to provide the best possible care to our patients." National Pathology Week, which was celebrated from November the 1st to the 7th, highlights the important contribution pathologists make to healthcare. Robert Smith, chairman of SERV Wessex, added, "We do a lot of work for Hampshire hospitals. They're a key part of the service we provide. So, it's really nice for them to do something to appreciate what we have done. We are just giving something back. We all want to give back to the NHS. We can provide our time and service for free, and it helps with patient care." Alex said that pathology departments play an important role in keeping hospitals running. She added, "Each service in pathology plays an important role in keeping our hospitals running, and though it is often behind the scenes, almost every patient journey will involve pathology at one time or another. We wanted to celebrate everything our amazing teams do every day and the difference they make to our patients as part of the week, alongside giving back to our partner, our charity partner." And this is accompanied by a couple of the motorcyclists, the SERV Wessex Blood Runners, with their high-vis jackets on and their high-vis motorbikes, which they use to deliver critical products.
Community cafe raises £300. A community cafe in a village near Winchester recently raised over £300 for a UK heart charity. On November the 17th, the Wanston Community Cafe raised £375 for Little Hearts Matter. It's the only national UK charity offering help to anyone affected by the diagnosis of single ventricle heart condition. From initial antenatal diagnosis through treatments and into life at home, the charity works with children, young adults and families to reduce the isolation, fear and lack of understanding created when a child is diagnosed as having half a working heart. In addition, one of the charity's local supporters, Karen Passingham, raised more than £100 by selling her recycled sock dogs. The most recent community cafe was held at the Victoria Hall, Sutton Scotney, on the morning of Wednesday this week, December the 15th. And this month, the cafe is raising funds for Wessex Heartbeat. They were offering locally made Christmas table decorations for sale, as well as hot chocolate, warm mince pies and other Christmas goodies to accompany the regular homemade cakes and coffee. And having been an attendee there, I can say the coffee and cakes were delightful. And it's one of our Winchester Talking Newspaper volunteers, Celia Ferguson, who's been involved with this from the start, who actually made all the table decorations. And they were absolutely delightful. And hopefully, in April next year, the community cafe will run and will support this charity, Winchester Talking Newspaper.
Book on gay history by ex-Hampshire policeman. A former police officer from Hampshire has written a history of one of the first lesbian and gay youth groups in the country. Dr. Clifford Williams, who lives in Andover, served 25 years in the police and has since gained postgraduate qualifications. In his new book looks at history of the groundbreaking London gay teenage group between 1967 and 1990. Excuse me. The book also covers the Southampton gay youth group in the 1970s, a time when prejudice was widespread and homosexuals faced often violent abuse on the streets. The book recounts meetings and conferences held in the Southampton only a few years after homosexuality was decriminalised. The group helped many young people with the issues of coming out and the problems with family, schools and the workplace. Dr. Williams has trawled through the archives, including Hampshire Record Office in Winchester, and used social media to contact many people who were there during the period. He said, "I was doing some archive research on police history in the Hampshire Records office and noticed a card in the room where the researchers eat their sandwiches. The card asked for lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans people who grew up in the 50s, 60s, 70s and 80s and 90s if they were willing to be interviewed by young people as part of the LGBT History Project. I contacted the project and was interviewed by a young LGBT person and also helped the project with their research. This inspired me to write the history of the gay youth group I was involved with as a young person." He has been promoting the book with a Zoom talk organised at October Books in Portswood, Southampton. He now is working on his next book about policing gay men in the 50s to 2010. His previous publications include A History of Women Policing Hampshire and the Isle of Wight in 1916 to 2016. And the book is published by the Book Guild, price £9.99. And there is a picture, obviously from the archives, of a group of young people. And it's the Southampton Gay Youth Event in 1982, held at the Magnums Club. And the image is from the London School of Economics Hall Carpenter Archives.
And this is Zara's Flight. A teenager who studied at a school in Winchester and is trying to be the youngest woman ever to fly around the world solo has finally reached Asia. Zara Rutherford, 19, studied at St. Swithin's School and has been on her journey since August the 18th, when she set out from Kortrijk, Belgium. She was set to finish in 3 months, but is currently set to return to her starting point on January the 13th because of bad weather and visa problems. After her latest delay in Vladivostok in Russia, Zara made it to South Korea on December the 11th, when she arrived at Gimpo Airport in Seoul. On her Facebook page, Fly Zolo, Zara said, "Arrived in Seoul yesterday and was extremely happy to not see any snow for the first time in quite a while. This was my longest flight so far, with about 6 hours in the air. Most of it was also over water. I had to do a huge detour to avoid North Korea as much as possible, which ended up working great. I was able to cruise at about 6,500 feet for most of the trip. Next, Zara is due to travel into Taiwan and then on to the Philippines. As of December 13, Zara is set to be in Delhi, India on Christmas Day, with maintenance due for New Year's Day."
Thank you. That concludes the extracts for this week. So thank you to our editors, copying and memory stick preparation teams. And just remains for all of us to say...
Happy Christmas.
Happy Christmas and goodbye, and do have a lovely festive period. And just a reminder that the next recording will not come out till the first weekend in January 2022. So goodbye, and when you finish with this week's recording, please put the memory stick back in the wallet and return it as soon as possible, placing the address label inside the wallet. Thank you.